Welcome everyone, and we're going to talk today about Lag BaOmer. It's Nogea. It's just about just starting Lag BaOmer, but just about now. It's almost Shkia, and I wrote a little about this morning in my message to the shul. And the date Lag BaOmer is not found anywhere in classical rabbinic tradition. The Talmud tells us that Rabbi Akiva's students died between Pesach and Shavuos. There is another source in the Medrash that said that they stopped dying, get this is the terminology, pros l'Shavuos. Pros l'Shavuos. Now, what does pros mean? So, the usually, like we say, achilas pras is half a loaf. Pros means to rip something in half. Right, the handwriting on the wall in Daniel, Mene Tekel Afarsin. We're going to break the Babylonians in half. That's a pun because the nation that did it was called Paras. So anyway, Pros LeShavuos is understood to mean half a month before Shavuos. So that's why the Sfardim, who seem to get it right, any Sfardim listening here, they don't celebrate tomorrow. They celebrate the day after tomorrow. They don't start shaving or taking haircuts or getting married until the day after Lag BaOmer. Okay, full disclosure, the Arizal and pretty much the Lubavitch Minhag is preferably not to stop the Avelos the morning until Shavuos itself. Because the original source, the Gemara in Yevamos Daf Samach Beis, says that Rabbi Akiva's students died until Shavuos. They didn't stop dying beforehand. Two other explanations are given for the celebration of Lag BaOmer is that's the day that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai died, or the day, according to the Chayodam and the Prichodosh, the day that Rabbi Akiva gave smicha to the last five students that carried on the rest of Torah from Bnei Israel. The 24,000 students of his that died were nothing special. They didn't amount to anything. None of them are named. But the five that he gave smicha to, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Nechemiah, and Rabbi Yossi, all became very famous in Jewish history for what they left us in writing. Rabbi Meir is Stam Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda is Stam Sifra, Rabbi Nechemiah is Stam Tosefta, Rabbi Shimon is Stam Sifrei, and he also wrote the Mechilta to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and Rabbi Yossi didn't leave us anything in writing, but he is the greatest of all five. The halacha is always like him when he argues with any of the other four. So these five rabbis really carried on the Torah, and you would think that after Rabbi Akiva lost so many students, that he would give up. You know, what's the point, right? You see Yonah giving up, you see Eliyahu giving up, you see the prophets giving up when things go very bad, but Rabbi Akiva did not. So there are many Gemaras throughout the Midrash and throughout rabbinic literature that speak of Rabbi Akiva seeing the worst of times and serving as a paradigm for us, hopefully, where we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, although it's hard to imagine any light that he saw at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. Be that as it may, Rabbi Akiva is the central figure of why this time period between Pesach and Shavuos is considered a mournful time. If you look in Ashkenazic custom, you see much more than Sfardim that this time period has been turned profoundly to a time period of mourning, and this is because of the Crusades. If you look at, remember some of the keynotes that we say on Tisha B'Av that speak of the destroyed communities of Magenza, of Worms, of Spire, of in France and Germany, and they name names. They tell the communities, they tell the years, and the Crusades especially took place at this time of year, right, just before Shavuos. And there is a prayer that we say every Shabbos that commemorates this. It's called Av HaRachamim. Mm-hmm. We say it right after Yukum Purkun and right before Ashrei. It's such a sorrowful prayer that we don't say it on a joyful day. We don't say it on Rosh Chodesh. We don't say it even on a day where we bench Rosh Chodesh. So there are some shuls that only say Av HaRachamim during Sfiras HaOmer. because this was the time of year, especially, that the Crusades did most of their damage. So this is why for Ashkenazim the Omer becomes a much more strict time period, where the original Gzeira was only not to get married during this time. And then the Ashkenazim added so many additional stringencies, including not listening to music, including not taking shaves and haircuts. Those are all addenda to the original Gzeira, which was just not to get married at this time of year. Be that as it may, this just explains what took place at this time. And I made what I hope was a forceful argument that Rabbi Akiva's students, who are, it's told in the Gemara, that they perished because they did not demonstrate respect one for the other, is a malignment. That's a censored text. I actually once saw Ksav Yad, a handwritten text of Yevamos Daf Samach Beis Amud Beis, that says that it doesn't say anything about the time of year. And in fact, in some new versions of Medrash Rabbah, and I want to get to that especially now, over the original sources in earlier Midrashim, Bereishis Rabbah is earlier than the Talmud Bavli. And Bereishis Rabbah has a special take on the death of Rabbi Akiva's students that I'd like to share with you in just a moment. But first, in this commentary of Bereishis Rabbah, it says that they died in battle. They died in war. They didn't have respect for one another in battle. I understand why not. Because the nature of Talmudic dialectic is that you argue. You don't take any authority in terms of your arguments back and forth. Soloveitchik loved it when students would scream at him and tell him, what kind of argument is that, right? Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish and all of the rabbis in the Gemara, they didn't want you to just sit back and listen and accept the Svara, right? They want to argue. But it would prove to me that you're right. We wouldn't talk to a doctor that way, but we talk when in learning, but I'm not talking about a psak halacha. I'm talking about just when learning, when giving a svara, does this resemble that? And then the Rebbe says yes, and the student says, what are you talking about? It doesn't resemble that at all. So in battle, though, you need a very, very clear-cut set of rules, and there is a chain of command. And one may understand that just thrown out into the battlefield because of a quick rebellion, the Rabbi Akiva students were not prepared for this. They weren't good soldiers. And therefore, it says that they didn't have respect for one another. It was meaning where it was so important at the time on the battlefield. And when the Gemara says they died of askira, so I mentioned that this morning, that my article is that Asker in ancient Turkish and in some other ancient Semitic languages means a soldier, right? So they died as soldiers, okay? I made reference to the famous Bar Kokhba letters. Are you familiar with this? We have the actual letters that Bar Kokhba wrote to the rabbis to deliver the Dalet Minim on Sukkos. Because the soldiers needed the Lulav and Esrog and Hadassim and Aravos. And he asks very famously for 5,000 of each. That is Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Rabbi Akiva says you only need one of each. One Hadass, one Arava, one Lulav, one Esrog. It's the opinion of the other Tanayim, of Tarfon and others, that say you need two Aravos and three Hadassim. According to the other opinions, Bar Kokhba should have asked for 10,000 Aravos and 15,000 Hadassim. Instead, he just asked for 5,000 of each, which reflects Rabbi Akiva's opinion. I must insist there is no clear-cut Talmudic reference to Rabbi Akiva supporting the revolts of Bar Kokhba. Adraba, it was the opinion of the rabbis to stay out of those kind of things. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai wanted very much to avoid the rebellion that was taking place in the old city of Yerushalayim. Remember, he had to arrange to be removed from that place in a casket so they can get out and plead to Vespasian on behalf of the Jews. And Vespasian was so impressed with him that he offered him three wishes of what to do for the Jews. The three wishes were a doctor for a particular rabbi who had been fasting for 40 years, the line of Rabban Gamliel should not be disrupted, and to allow the yeshiva in Yavne to continue unabated. He did not ask for Yerushalayim because it seems that he felt that it was lost. And in Gemara Brachas Daf Chav Ches, it says that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai at his deathbed was always worried that perhaps he made the wrong decision on that. Be that as it may, it was always the opinion of the rabbis to stay out of those kind of rebellions, but that might have been the right move in the year 70, in the year 68, in the year 80, but not in the year 135. I don't want to second guess Rabbi Akiva here. It had disastrous results with what's known as the Haruge Beitar. But Rabbi Akiva says if they're going to outlaw Torah, if they're going to kill off all rabbis giving smicha, then it's not the time to make deals. This is the time to go all out rebellion. And the Rambam is the main character who tells us about Rabbi Akiva's approach at this time. Rambam writes in Hilchos Melachim that no one should think that Mashiach is to be called upon to perform miracles to prove that he's Mashiach. But the proof is that Rabbi Akiva thought that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. And he wanted to be his armor bearer. And Bar Kokhba certainly was no miraculous figure. So that's the Rambam's approach. And if this is correct, it stands to reason that Rabbi Akiva would send his students to fight in this rebellion. That's where he lost his students. Not because they didn't have kavod for one another. How could Rabbi Akiva, who's famous for so many beautiful mamre chazal about kavod abrios and about avas Yisrael, and he doesn't teach his talmidim to have derech eretz, it's a malignment. And I know that Herschel Schechter Shlita has been teaching this for years now in Shiurim, that we should walk away from. You know, the Gemara says Lo Nagu Kavod Zebazeh. Let's explain it. Lo Nagu Kavod Zebazeh. Now that the Anaf Yosef in his parish to Precious Rabba says they didn't have kavod for each other on the battlefield because they were not good soldiers. Okay, now let's get back to Precious Rabba. I've told you on numerous occasions. The Bereishis Rabbah is one of our oldest written records of Jewish literature. It predates the Talmud, the two Talmuds, the Jerusalem Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud. It predates, pretty much it's about the same time as the Mishnah and the Midrashei Halacha. It's very old, it's Tanaic in nature, and you can tell that it's written in Israel by certain other anomalies about the nature of the Aramaic. There's Babylonian Aramaic, that's like the Aramaic of Targum Onkelos. There's Eretz Yisrael Aramaic, like the Aramaic of the Yerushalmi kind of Targumim and Targum Yonason. So Bereishis Rabbah is written in Israel, and I'd like to suggest that it more than other Midrashim, has something profoundly important at stake in presenting Rabbi Akiva's revolt in a particular way, and I tell it to you based on the context of the two places where it appears. It appears in Bereishis Rabbah in Parshas Chayesara, and it appears in Koheles Rabbah, admittedly a much later medrash. Koheles Rabbah just copied out what Bereishis Rabbah had, and if I give you the pasuk in Koheles Rabbah where it appears, you'll be able to guess where in Bereishis Rabbah it is. In Koheles Rabbah, it's on the pasuk Dor Holeich V'Dor Ba. Medrash in Koheles Rabbah speaks about the generations coming and the generations going, and that even when one generation suffers an incredibly cataclysmic loss, think the Holocaust, if you will, the Jewish people can never give up hope of Am Yisrael Chai because Dor Ba. Because there's a new generation that is coming, and that generation will be suffused with the optimism to carry on, even though the bottom just bottomed out. Rabbi Akiva saw foxes running wild in Har HaBayis. He took solace because he felt it can't get any worse than this. I explained this last week in the shiur. That he understood that this means that it's time to now buy the stock when it's low. Now it's time to really build up. So this is the theme of Koheles, that even in the midst of suffering, we have to be able to be strong enough to carry on,
2 weeks ago, if you recall, I attributed this to Nekeva, to Sovev Gaver. It was also in the Shir HaShirim Shir, if you recall, that Yirmiyahu said one of the signs of the return in the future, it's the Torah of Rosh Hashanah, we talk about personal tshuva, personal return. So the Haftorah takes from a story of the national return from exile. And the Yirmiyahu says that I'll create a new thing in the land. Nekeva to Sovev Gover. The woman shall be central to that return. You know, like you heard this in the Hanukkah story, like the Nashim Tzidkanios in the Purim story, and like Esther in the Yitzias Mitzrayim story, and like Esther in the Purim story. That women will be central, and that in the time of the right after the Holocaust, the Jewish community had become very withdrawn, and who knew what was going to be in the future for the Jews. But that when women started to emerge in the realm of Jewish education, the Beis Yaakov movement was especially important for this. This gave a certain chashivas for Torah that made its way possible that the yeshiva world could be what it is today. And it's because of Yirmiyahu's prophecy of Nekeva to Sovev Gaver. Rabbi Kiva, when he came back after 24 years away from home, and his wife came out, his wife Rachel, came out to greet him, and all of his students, he had thousands of students trailing him. And his wife came out to greet him and to embrace him. So some students came to push her away. Who's this woman coming to embrace our Rebbe? So Rebbe Akiva said something then that I believe is quoted in the name of Abraham Lincoln, right? When he speaks of his mother, Sarah. Anybody know what the quote is? I never like to say it. It's okay to say what's mine is hers, right? I say that about my wife all the time. But it's a little presumptuous to say what's mine and yours is hers, right? That's what Abraham Lincoln said about his mother to one time to his cabinet. What's mine and what's yours is my mother's. All right, that might be a little presumptuous, but that's what Rabbi Akiva told his students. It's Nekeva to Sovev Gaver. If not for her, I would not be where I am today. It's because of her. Her name was Rachel. She actually has, you know, there's a place called Kever Rochel. Anybody ever visit it? It's right outside of Tveria. It's called Kever Rochel. There's a big sign on the front. He said, what, Kever Rochel? Isn't that in Beis Lechem? So, no, that's Kever Rochel, the wife of Rabbi Akiva. She is visited. It's a shrine for women. And you should go there sometime if you can. Okay, so she's buried alongside Rabbi Akiva. But it says on the other side, Kever Rochel. All right, So this is, so what is Koheles Rabbah saying? Dor holech v'dor bad, never give up hope. So this is word for word taken out of Bereishis Rabbah. Anyone would like to venture where in Bereishis Rabbah does this point make itself so clear, especially since we're talking about women here? So the answer is, I'll give the parasha, Chaye Sara. Now that should be a giveaway. Chaye Sara quotes this story of Dor Halech V'Dor Ba. And then both Koheles Rabbah, after telling us that you might feel like all is lost when a great person dies, in the case of Chaye Sara, of course, Sara, but don't think that all is lost, because Ad Shelo Shoka Shimshor Shel Sara Kvar Zorcha Shimshor Shel Rivka. That before the sun set on the greatness of Sarah, Imenu, the son of Rivka, was already rising. And then the Gemara uses this as a springboard to give all kinds of other examples of this. Remember who was born the day Rabbi Kiva died? Rabbi Yudan Nasi. Every time someone dies in the Gemara, another great person was born just then. By the way, that's the scholarship of how we know the year that Rashi was born. We have no independent knowledge of the year that Rashi was born. He wasn't famous when he was born. We know when he died in 1105. But how do we know he was born in the year 1040? Right? The contemporary evidence seems to point to the fact that he was born before then. But why do the scholars say he was born in 1040? Because that's the year that, anybody? Rabbeinu Gershom died. A famous person, when he dies, we know the year he dies because he's famous when he dies. But he's not famous when he's born. So we only have to, you know, we have to hope for some kind of secondary evidence. But Rashi's birth at 1040 is, and you just wait, in the year 2040, which is closer than you think, in 20 years, I assure you, every scholarly place in the world is going to be having these millennia Rashi celebrations. Hopefully we'll be able to get out of quarantine by then. And we'll be there'll be all kinds of in the year 2040, and maybe people will question, was Rashi really born in 1040? But that's the point, is that Rashi was born just as Rabbeinu Gershom died, just as Rivka is born, just as Sarah dies, and this is the point of Rabbi Akiva. Both these midrashim, Dor Alech v'Dor Bo in Koheles, the death of Sarah, which is immediately just preceded by the birth of Rivka. That these events all underscore the point that Jewish history is replete with these tragedies, but that the Jews always considered that the refuah is already there, that the healing is already there before the makkah. So that is what I insist to you that is going on in with Rabbi Akiva's students. And now let me move back to the Sfiras HaOmer. Now we all know we're about to count at night. The Sfiras HaOmer is counted at night, but that's a little anomalous. The Gemara in Menachos asks, really, we should count the Omer during the day. Because it says, Usfartu Lachem, right? It says, Sheva Shevasos, Sheva, right? So it says, when should you start counting? Miyom hakrivchem es omer hatnufa. Start counting from the day you offer that second day of Pesach barley offering. So it's a commission in the Seches Megillah that whenever the word yom appears attached to a mitzvah, then you're supposed to do that mitzvah during the day. Yom trur yelachem shofar by day. Lukachtem lachem by yom rishon luluvan esrut by day. Yom hashmini yom basar laso, a bris is performed only by day. Any of these mitzvahs done at night has to be redone. The bris, I guess, would just be a toughest dumb bris. But the bris performed at night is not a bris. So Sfiras HaOmer should be during the day. The word yom appears. So the Gemara answers, because it says, Sheva Shabbosos Tmimos Tihiyena. And if you didn't start to count at night, because the day starts at night, you wouldn't have Tmimos. I've seen in some Haggadahs, it says to count the Omer at benching. You ever see it? Open up some Haggadahs. It says, now we count the Omer. No! If you count the Omer at benching, you're 4 or 5 hours short of Tmimos. You want to start counting the Omer immediately following Maariv, when the second day of Pesach, the 16th of Nisan, is just starting. Right? Because I want to have 49 complete days. What is that all about? Where does it come from? What do I need to have a total completion between Pesach and Shavuos? So I want to now, if I may, answer the question I left on a message to the show last week. Someone asked me a beautiful question. He had to travel to Hong Kong, and he said there are two ways for the plane to travel. And if he goes one way, it'll save him $3,000, but he will miss a day of the Omer. He'll miss a whole day of in the travel. You know, Wednesday, he arrives on Friday, and he doesn't know when Thursday is. So the question was, there is a solution to this, but the question was, am I allowed to travel and save $3,000, even though I'll miss a full day of the Omer? So suffice it to say that there are things to do to latch on to that day quickly as you're traveling. You look at your watch, you see how many time zones you're moving. But the point, though, is because the reason for the concern is because of Sheva Shabbosos Tmimos Tihiyena, if you miss a whole day of the Omer, then there is a din that you should not count the rest of the way with a bracha. Okay? So the person worried that if I miss the whole day, I'm going to lose out on 23 more brachas. So maybe I should travel this way. So there's an interesting tshuva in Rav Moshe Sternbach about a person who was having surgery on his hip surgery during the Omer. And he was going to be out for a certain amount of time. And so there, he said that even if you need to miss the whole night, just count the next day. No one's out for 24 hours. But then he took another question from someone who was having surgery. He got the first date he could. It was something for a heart condition that was potentially life-threatening. And he was going to be out in anesthesia for two whole days. So his question was, so he's going to be out in an induced coma for 2 days. Should I not even start counting the Omer with a bracha? You get it? Maybe I shouldn't even start because I know I'm going to miss some days in the middle. So maybe I shouldn't even start with a bracha. Rav Moshe Sternbach paskin to him that he should start. And you let the time worry about itself. Who knows what's going to happen down the line. And that's what he did. But we do have this essence of the fullness of the 49 days. Why? What is this? Whoever said such a thing? Why should 49 days not just be 49 separate mitzvahs? So do we have to say it's all one mitzvah? That's one of the excuses given for why we don't say a Shechianu when we start counting the Omer on the second day of Pesach. If that was the reason, then because you're afraid you're going to miss. So if you know you made the whole 49 days straight through, so on the night before Shavuos, say a Shechianu right there. In a Chinami, it's something perhaps proper to do. It's just that the poskim say that because today we don't have the Minchas Omer, we don't have the carbon to bring with the Omer. So it's like Agmas Nefesh. You get it? It's like, how can you say a Shechianu on a mitzvah that's missing the carbon? Until, according to this explanation, when the Beis HaMikdash is built, B'mehera B'yameinu, we will say a Shechianu, either the first night or the last night. You get it? Okay? So on this, very interesting Psak Halacha, the Rambam is almost alone in holding that Sfiras HaOmer, Zman HaZeh, is a Torah law. Rambam holds Sfiras HaOmer is Doraisa. There's an interesting psak that comes along this Rambam. Because I ask you this question, what's stopping us from offering Karbanos right now on Har HaBayis? What's stopping us? Politics. It's because the... When we took over Har HaBayis in 1967, the Arabs were expecting us to banish all of them and take over. This is why they say, you know yourselves that there was never a temple up there on the Temple Mount that you call. Because if you thought there was a temple there, you never would have given it up. You would have stayed there. Who gives up a place where their ancient temple stood? Right? We know that we have the rights to be there because our mosques were there and you never had anything holy up there. Because if you had something holy up there, you never would have given it up. You get it? All right, but for whatever the thing is, we did give it up in the interest of peace. Because to us, peace and life is much more valuable and much higher value than things, than a thing. So this is... When we went up to Har HaBayis, we felt that this was the right thing to do. So now that we have these 49 separate divisible days, we can to so that we hold the Rambam holds that nothing stopping us from bringing the Korban Minchas Omer is just politics. But we could have on the second day of Pesach. In fact, let me tell you, there are some people who hold that we should be bringing carbon Pesach. Nothing's stopping us from being carbon Pesach. Tumah is hudra b'tzibur. We don't have to worry that we don't have the ashes of the paraduma today. We can go up there, make a mizbeach, and close your eyes when you go up to Har HaBayis because they're afraid someone's saying Kriyat Shema then. full disclosure, I happen to be of the opinion that we shouldn't be walking there now because we're tummy, but still, there are plenty of poskim who go up there and think we should have a presence up there. But since there's nothing stopping us from bringing the korbanos, so Sfiras Omer is a doraisa. We didn't bring the korban. That's our fault. But we could have. All right? This is, by the way, the Rambam is Lishitaso. You know, there's a law in the Torah that if you bring a korban outside of Yerushalayim, outside of Har Habayis, then you are chayav for something called Shvut Echutz. All the Rishonim hold that you're only chayav for Shvut Echutz when there's a standing Beis HaMikdash. Right? What's the case? If you offer a goat in your backyard because you violated last Shabbos, according to the Rambam, you're chayav karis. You violated the Torah, a very strict violation. According to everybody else, it's just narishkeit. There's no temple, so there's no temple to be offering out of. And yet the Rambam holds that if you offer a goat as a korban today, you're chayav karis. Why? Because so what that there's no temple? Just because there's no temple doesn't mean that we shouldn't be bringing korbanos. If the Rambam were alive today, he probably would be lobbying for us to bring goats up, the sheep up there every day to bring a korban tamid. Right? So there is a temple place, right? There's a temple mount. If you bring a korban outside of that place, you'd be chayav. Okay, so Camille, you have a question?
Yeah, I thought that you cannot bring a korban now because, as you said, people are tamid, right? So unless you had a red heifer, till you find the red heifer, that's perfect.
I just addressed that, is that there's something called Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur. So means that, but your question is still salient, because to offer a korban in your backyard, Tumah is not Hutra there. Tumah is Hutra B'Tzibur. For the whole community, if the only way to bring a korban is to do so in a state of ritual impurity, then Tumah is no longer an issue. There's a famous question that the Pnei Yehoshua asks about the Hanukkah story. So what that all the oil was impure? So what? With Tumah Sutra B'Tzibur, the only oil you have is impure oil. You're allowed to light with that. An answer to that might be, I'm sorry for all these tangents, is that it says Shiktu. They made it Shekets. Tumah is Matir, certain types of Tumah, but not Tumah Sabot Zara. If that oil was Tomei Avodah Zarah, then they couldn't use that because of Tumah Kavitzibah. Okay, be that as it may, I'd like to give a drash about this indivisibility of the 49 days. This custom of ours that if you miss an entire day of the Omer, that you can't count the rest of the way with a bracha. That there's something about the Tmimos. The Gemara says Tmimos teaches that you have to count at night because the Jewish day starts at night, and if we counted the first day in the morning, you would only have 49 and 48 and a half days, right? So we need 49 full days, which means that we should start counting the first day at the very beginning of that day, which, remember, the Haggadah, not at benching, after Marv. Okay. So on this, I would like to conclude with a drash. I'd like to conclude with a drash. There's an incredibly amazing halacha in Judaism that if someone comes to a real rasha comes up to a teacher teaching with 50 students, and he says, listen, you have 10 seconds. You either give me one of these students to kill, or I'm going to kill all 50 of them. Right? You familiar with this halacha, Mishnah and Trumas? Can't give over any one of them. They're all going to die anyway. You might as well save the life of 49 of them. Right? It makes sense. It's so illogical to let all 50 die. And yet, the halacha says that you can't choose one. The teacher can quickly say, does anyone here want to volunteer? The teacher can make some kind of an agreement for an arbitrary choice, because then that creates a rodef. The arbitrary choice may be the one in this room with the next birthday, or the one who celebrated the birthday closest to today, right? It's passed already. That person, and then they'll discuss, okay, who has a birthday in the next week, or who had a birthday a week ago, and then they'll see, okay, that person will then volunteer. But short of having something like that, it just doesn't make sense. Of course, how could you let everybody die? He's going to shoot everybody when he would have been satisfied just shooting one, right? This is true in all life. True if they say, give us one of these women to violate, we'll violate all of them. You can't choose one because there's no roding. What kind of sense does this make? It's the same sense of the mission that says you saves one life is as if though he saved the entire world. Because this is what animates Jewish values. The Jewish value system is predicated on the fact that we are created in God's image. And that when Rabbi Akiva saw the direction that Rome was taking here, he just said that I know that this is a dangerous move. Historians are still questioning whether it was the right thing to do to rebel against the Hadrianic persecutions. Were the Hadrianic persecutions a result of the rebellion, or is the rebellion just to rebel against the Hadrianic persecutions? We can, we can say maybe a little bit of both of them. But the point is that there's always a risk in such a thing. You can always just say, all right, let's just let the Romans do what they want, and I'm not going to put my students in any danger. But then I all I can judge is that Rabbi Akiva's teachings are still with us. I don't know what the Jewish world today would look like had Rabbi Akiva allowed the Hadrianic persecutions to go on unprotested. I don't know what Judaism would look like today, right? There is archaeological evidence that the Third Temple was being rebuilt during this time. Anybody ever hear of this? And I think you should know that in the news today, just yesterday, a coin from these 2.5 years of the successful revolt was just found on Har Bayis. Anybody see this in the news today? Right? There are coins that were minted that said in the first year of the revolt, the second year of the revolt, right? Then Nebuch, the Romans, when they put down the revolt, they minted coins that say on it, I have a big medal with it. It says Judea Capta, with a Roman soldier with his boot on the neck of a Jew. And on the other side of the coin, it says in Hebrew, B'shavu banim l'gvulam, about the return of Zion in 48, that the Romans are no longer here, and we are. Reish Lakish, who is Namora, so Reish Lakish says that in the future, these Roman hippodromes and these Roman colosseums and these Roman arenas will be places of Torah and of Tefillah. And you can always tell if you visit any of them in places like Beit Shan, Caesarea, you can tell if some of our ancestors were tortured to death and made food for lions based on the nature of the arena. If the seats go all the way down to the bottom, then that was just for plays and for art and for things like that. But if the lowest seat is 10, 15 feet off the ground, right, then our ancestors were killed in that place. There's just such a place like that in Beit Shan, and there's a place like that in Caesarea. And the Medrash says that Rabbi Akiva was skinned alive in Caesarea. And Mistama, it was in that hippodrome. So the last time we were, if you recall, we were in a tour there. We took a group and we stopped. I remember it was a burning hot day, right? And again, it must have been 120 degrees there. But we stopped at the hippodrome and we went into the area of the arena where the horses were racing. And we davened mincha, and then I gave a shir in order to fulfill the words of Reish Lakish, who said that in the future, these arenas will be places for tefillah and places for learning. And the Romans who enjoyed themselves there are no longer remembered. And especially for Reish Lakish to make this statement, because the contemporary scholarship on Reish Lakish's origins, if you look at all the Gemaras about Reish Lakish in his youth, remember with the cannibals and with the gang of robbers and Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish means the head of the gang, right? He went to learn Torah and he became the head of the gang of Torah scholars. He kept his name, Reish Lakish, right? But he started off, according to some modern scholarship, as a gladiator. I mean, he had tremendous physical prowess. He was able to jump over the Yarden. Remember the Gemara in Bava Metzia with Rabbi Yochanan met him? And Rabbi Yochanan said, you should use your strength for Torah. So this Chevra, Rabbi Akiva, made a rebellion for Torah. He felt that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was right in submitting and not joining the rebellion. But Rabbi Akiva just felt that in my generation, that is not the correct move. Right? Normally we'll go along with Shlomo Malchus, but with these persecutions, that was not the realm. And he was always the one who gives us the hope for a better day. He sees foxes running wild and he sees the silver lining. That's Rabbi Akiva. So Chevra, let's just to review everything we did here. The racist rabbi, of the Megish Rabba, Rav Yosef says that they died in battle. The commentaries now are saying 24,000 students from Akiva did not die of a terrible lung disease and a pulmonary diseases because of lack of respect. Admittedly, the disease is called Asura, and it's established Asura in the Torah. Torah scholar, but you don't have respect, you're nullifying your Torah. You're mevatel your Torah, just the same way we're mevatel chametz by Erev Pesach. You crumble it up and toss it to the wind. That's what happens to your Torah if you don't have respect. Right? So it does fit that askara, but that amazing ancient word, which means soldier, means they died as soldiers. I'd rather understand Rabbi Akiva's this way. Never, hopefully this interpretation will carry the day, and let Rabbi Akiva continue to serve for us as that paradigm of the one who would never lose hope, and to celebrate Lag BaOmer. It's bittersweet to celebrate it the way we have to observe each and every one of our days, and hopefully we'll return to our places of worship, return to our places of learning. Meantime, it's great to be invited right into your homes and to invite me into your homes and invite you to come into my home. It's good to see you all here. We're going to have Mariv in just a few moments.